Good morning.
And my name is Esther Filippini. I am the Deputy Director of the Transparency and Accountability Initiative. We are a donor collaborative, and our goal is to strengthen the impact of transparency, accountability, and participation to build a more democratic world where people, especially those most marginalized, have voice, and where the governments and the private sector act with integrity. Our current members include the Ford Foundation, Hewlett, Luminate, MacArthur, Open Society Foundations, Chandler, Skoll, and recently USAID also joined as an observer. But not only TI members, other funders as well recognize now more and more the need to fund more locally led efforts. And one way of doing it is through intermediary funders. But there are many different types of funders, many different types of intermediaries, as we will hear. I think some don't even like to be called intermediaries. So today we have the honor to have with us leaders of three socio-environmental funds in Latin America, and my wonderful colleague Cristina Ordóñez. She conducted a scoping study, including interviews also with other funds, and I think we have representatives of other funds in Latin America with us as well. So she will share with us some of the findings, the key findings of this scoping study, and then she will have a conversation with the leaders of the funds to learn more practical details and also a little bit of the philosophy behind the social environmental funds. And then we will move to a conversation section. But before we start, today's event was also generously co-sponsored by the Human Rights Funders Network. And before giving the word to Cristina, I really would like to invite Kelia Miller. She's the Executive Director of the Human Rights Funders Network to give us a few words of welcome. So Kelia, the word is yours.
Thank you, Esther. Welcome, everyone. It is so wonderful to see your faces. I was just off for a week, and so I'm just returning to Zoom. It's a strange new and old world. But one of the reasons that Human Rights Funders Network was so enthusiastic to support this and share this out with our network is because we are a global network of funders. We're not an international network. We're not a top-down network. We are truly global. And the funds that you're hearing from today are showing what philanthropy can be at its best in a way that is grounded in communities, that is working to shift power and really make this a global funding ecosystem. We're very proud that Amalia, who is speaking today, is a member of our steering committee. And one thing that she has consistently reminded us as a network, and I'm sure you will hear today, is that the survival of our communities cannot be separated from the survival of our planet. And being in conversation with all of you, but especially with these funds, gives us an opportunity to deeply understand what that looks like and to imagine a future in which that our planetary and communal survival is integrated. So thank you so much for including us, for showing us new models and new paths, and for bringing us all together today. I'm looking forward to learning from you all, both in the discussion and in the questions that I'm sure will follow.
Great. Thank you so much, Kelia. Cristina.
Yeah. Many thanks, Kelia and Esther. And thanks, everyone, for joining this call. As Esther said, I'm working at the Transparency and Accountability Initiative as program coordinator, and I developed a brief scoping study regarding the social environmental funds. So I will make a brief presentation of the findings, and then I will leave the conversation also with our speakers. So I will make my presentation in Spanish. So I will change. Bueno, entonces, como les comentaba, desde Transparency and Accountability.
As I was telling you, from Transparency Accountability Initiative, we put together this very descriptive study on how funds, social environmental funds in South America are working. And for this, I interviewed the five funds that are currently working in South America Fund, Casa Brasil, Emerger Fund Colombia, Fundación Semilla Bolivia, Socio Environmental Fund of Peru, and Ñeque Fund of Ecuador. And I see some of the people that I met are actually here, so I'm very, very glad to see you all here. Very quickly, what are social environmental funds? Well, this is a model that is based on the approach of community philanthropy or philanthropy for social justice. There are funds that were created by local stakeholders that are part of the social environmental movement of these countries. And the objective is to channel funding to baseline organizations, to community social movements that do not usually get funding. And the objective is to answer to these local needs through continuous consultations on their needs. Besides funding, these funds also strengthen the capacities and capabilities of these stakeholders and carry out continuous work to create support networks between the different stakeholders in these territories. The origin of these funds starts more or less into Gulf. Started, and there are conversations to replicate this model in different countries of Latin, South America mainly, that share the basin of the Amazon River. And in 2019, 2020, the operations in Bolivia, Ecuador, Colombia, Peru started working. Also in the consolidation process for these funds in 2021, the Social Environmental Alliance of South Funds was created, comprised by five funds in South America, and there are actually nine funds, Mexico, Central America, Mozambique, and the Asian Southeast, and I can see there are people from there in this meeting as well. These funds mainly get funding from international donors, and we're going to see some of the challenges and topics that we will be working on regarding the mobilization of local and international philanthropy, which is still a challenge for these funds. So these funds channel local initiatives and funding. The amounts vary in between $3,000 and $11,000, depending on the countries and the callings, and projects regarding climate change, territorial rights, sustainable management of natural resources are funded. There were some callings for the mitigation of the impacts of the pandemic, conservation, strengthening, organizational strengthening. There are several topics in this matter. There are some of these, the last callings that have been released. And in a document that we systematized from TI with these findings, you will be able to see more information on the budgets, who the donors are, operations mechanisms, among others. This document will be shared after the meeting. But this was just a general introduction of funds for you to be able to know what funds are currently in South America. And now I'm going to give the floor to the conversation with our panelists, with whom we will go deeper in detail on these funds. So our panelists are Maria Amélia Souza from Brazil. She's a co-founder, and she was a former director of Fundo Casa Brasil. Juan Camilo Mira, he is the executive coordinator of the Emerger Fund in Colombia, and Eduardo Franco, founder and president of the Fundación Semilla in Bolivia. We interviewed the three of them for this study, and with them, we will work on our conversation. Once we finish this stage of some questions that I will be asking to them, we will open the space for you to ask some questions in English and Spanish, whatever you feel better in. So I will begin with Maria Amélia, and I will switch to English.
Thanks for being here with us this morning. So my question is, we want you to give us like a general panorama of the funds. So how is the social environmental funds model different from a traditional intermediary? What are the advantages, the challenges of this model? We would like to hear, for example, how you ensure sustainability of the projects you fund, and also how you measure impact and success. So it's a big question, Amalia, you have the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you, everyone, for being here. We really love to share this story because it's really a story of building a way of being in the world and in the space of philanthropy that has taken us, some of us, almost 40 years, like me, and others, the local actors who have been trying for so long to make resources get to the most excluded community-based groups that are the true guardians of our most important biomes on this planet. They, you know, no matter how well-intentioned the international funders of every kind and how they adapt their models, the scale that's necessary to reach this community and the delicate procedures, the relationships, the local currency that is necessary to be able to reach them, all of that was built over the years because we were activists and we're seeing that it was just going to be impossible to include so many of these communities. And those are the key protectors of the most important biomes in this planet. And now, you know, more and more, and as we hear about the whole, all the efforts, mostly even from philanthropy, to localize philanthropy, to finance local communities, indigenous communities. We have been doing this for a very long time and it's very complex. It's possible, but you have to meet them where they are. And mostly they have never had any contact with philanthropy. They don't know philanthropy exists. They don't know that anybody cares, that they are fighting with their lives to protect their lands and their ways of life. And we need to get to them. We need to know who they are. And that is, I think, that's the biggest difference of socio-environmental funds as compared to other approaches, mostly when they are local and they are created by local actors, activists, people have also dedicated their whole lives to protect those places with social justice, because I think that's exactly the connection. And that's why we insisted and translated this word that works in Spanish and but was created in Brazil. So socioambiental, this word didn't exist 25 years ago. The construction of the social justice movement and environmental actors to bring a concept. We are working to protect life on this planet, period. So it's not about just trees, it's not about just animals, it's everything. And it's about humans and not cut up in any social cause that we have, you know, that we're passionate about. But it's about all of it. That's one, definitely one conversation we have a lot at the HRFN because so that's, I guess, the reason it took us so long to be able to express to the field what we were trying to do, because we are actually a multi-approach kind of fund. We fund everything. So, but mostly the way that we explain, and that's why we came together as an alliance, is because all of us working in the social justice and environmental justice aspect across the global South kind of came to the same conclusions and have had the same experiences of how you actually do this and how do you increase the number of communities that are able to be accessed by philanthropy, because it's not the other way around. It's not us waiting and making a call for proposals once a year and waiting for somebody to apply. They're never going to do that, right? So it's building from the ground up. So doing that, we had to actually build the whole structure backwards. It's not about, oh, we're going to be a fund, we're going to set up a board and we're going to create programs and then we're going to wait for people. We're just going to announce it in the internet or whatever and wait for them to apply. They're not going to do that. The people we want to reach are not going to find us. So that's mostly the principle. And the reason we came together is because we had to actually be able to coordinate the narrative. And in a way, we follow the steps of the Women's Fund, right? How coming together, Prospera and all the Women's Funds, their voice is so much stronger. So when we came to the North, to the Northern Philanthropy, which has been, you know, long-standing, and there were two categories mostly that people knew, right? The private foundations and the public foundations, those who raise funds to fund their causes. And those were our funders, the movements in the Global South for a very long time. But in the last 20 years, we realized that we had to get ourselves, you know, up to speed, that if we were going to reach the success in our societies and the strengthening of democracy. So the Women's Funds did that with their local movements. And we as socio-environmental activists wanted to figure out a way to do it for our field as well. And that's why we came to do this. So that's why we came together, because we needed a stronger united voice that tells the world we have the infrastructure, we have the capacity to receive resources, and we right now need to land these large amounts of resources that are popping up around the world into our structures, not just the local funds, but all of our countries have strong infrastructure of all kinds of important NGOs of every size. So there's a lot of possibility to absorb more resources, but there's a lack of trust. And that's a study that we're working on at HRFN, right? The trust gap between the North and South, how most of the money for the Global South are actually given to Global North structures or their offices in the Global South. So still it's a big concentration. So this is one of the things we are here to do. And the other is actually that we need to build local philanthropy. We are in countries that have been historically colonial and that have, you know, the resources. Most of the resources are held by 1% of the population, like the land. And that's the culture that we deal with. So the resources are not really, they're not given. They're mostly managed by whoever has the money. That's already, you know, there's enough data about that. So this is also our goal. And that's something that nobody else can do for us. Local philanthropies, local philanthropic structures like us are the only ones who actually can push our own cultures and countries and people of wealth and whatever corporations or where the money sits to actually invest in our society. It's a very long ways. I'm going to wait to talk about this in my other question there. So the last two things here, right? So beneficiaries, how do we ensure that they are sustainable? Because we are not trying to create any kind of dependency. And that's in our mind from the start. So what happens with our grant making is that we meet communities that most of them have never, ever gotten any penny from anywhere. And they wouldn't if we didn't create a system to actually get to them. So we meet them where they are. What tools do they need to be able to learn about management and about the legal demands in the country of accounting laws, labor laws, whatever, so they can stay compliant, I guess. So we actually bring the resources with the tools. So there is training, there's conversation, there's a series of procedures that we do. We bring that. And there's two like large areas. So we don't decide we have this program and we're only going to, and then you have to fit our program. We meet them where they are in terms of institutional needs as well. They are the ones who decide what they need the money for. It could be for creating the structure. It could be for a specific project. It could be that along the way, something came up and they need to change the project to something else and they can consult. And we always say yes. So there's a close relationship. There is an embracing the way we work is that we embrace whatever reality they have. So one area is sustainable solutions. So there's a lot of that, you know, renewable energy in communities that are so far away that they don't have any resources, and they create a community business that improves their revenue 80% from using middlemen. And that's the reason we don't use intermediary word, because in Portuguese, that is the word, middlemen. Intermediaries are the ones who take the money and, you know, and pay very little to communities. That's why we refuse to be called intermediaries. We are a bridge for resources to reach those communities. And the other area, the big area, is protection of rights. And that's a whole other way of making grants, protecting the rights defenders, protecting defense of territory, using conventions and in the legislation to be able to protect those territories. This is a whole other area and a whole other way of making those grants. So it's not about them creating dependency at all. It's about actually pushing them to the next level. So there is no dependency. And the way we have been mapping the success is because we intentionally have been creating indicators, and we've built from scratch a very sophisticated database that now all the Alliance members are beginning to use and adapt, those who want, but most of them aren't. So we have the system and we are sharing everything, the principles and then how to do it, all the tools, all the forms, all the systems, everything we can share. CASA can share with others, but also the other funds in the way that they work. So we have been able to actually demonstrate evidence of success. So it's more than just measuring. It's that we've known because of our experience in the field and because of our approach, the systemic approach that actually uses the systemic, the systems thinking and dynamic science. It's not just a word. I'm just writing an article that's going to come out soon in our report that talks about the science behind the model. So I'm just hoping that you read that as soon as it comes out. So it's about measuring evidence. And the more we look, the more evidence we see. And then we've been creating publications, and we have tons of them in our website, the CASAS Fund website, about all kinds of approaches and the numbers. So you have quantitative and qualitative data that now we can actually demonstrate effectiveness. So I think I'm going to stop because I could go on for it.
Thanks, Maria Amélia, for your... It was a big question. So thanks for your answer. Ahora voy a pasar a Juan Camilo.
Now I'm going to go to Juan Camilo from the Emerger Fund in Colombia. We more or less understand what the model of social environmental funds is about, but we would like to go more into detail and understand what the tools that you use as funds are, and probably the beneficiaries of these grants are tools for accountability, transparency that you use. If you can tell us how decisions are made on beneficiaries, the topics, how they are decided upon, etc. Thank you very much, Cristina. I will speak in Spanish. My Spanish is not as bad as my English, so I will make a presentation in Spanish. I will talk about six gross mechanisms. The first one is closeness that Cristina was talking about and that Amelia has been talking about as well, the closeness of funds with beneficiaries and inter-territory organizations. This closeness and tight relation built with organizations make the information not to be intermediated or to be little intermediated, this communication to be direct towards the society and communities as much as possible. The other mechanism that funds use is the construction of relations in the territory, in networks of relations with key stakeholders, allies, not only organizations, but with a series of interesting actors on site that help us build this capillarity, this networking of the funds for action. So this is another mechanism, the relationship with allies that we build on a daily basis. The third mechanism, which I believe is very interesting and is very common, is the fact that decisions, funding decisions, and organization strengthening decisions are done collectively under collective structure. They are not like people holding a crown. I have my capacities are very limited to act as a prince or as a king, you know, to decide who I fund, if I fund a political campaign or my interests. As a coordinator, I am always mediating with the committee, and we are working on the fund in an advisory national committee that will help us with the projects. We have carried out tests for this mechanism to work, and this makes the people on site, those who have the experience at a regional and topic level, participate much more actively in those decisions. So the collective aspect here, the group aspect, is fundamental for funds. Of course, there are mechanisms back and forth for reports, feedback through the reports, funds produce reports on a regular basis, but we also have institutional mechanisms that mandate us to produce public information. In Colombia, the same thing happens probably in Peru and Bolivia, which are similar legislations and that are states or nations that are similar to us, the information of NGOs, of a nonprofit organizations, is information that needs to be public on websites. So we need to publish our financial statements and our results reports to the public, so which is beyond what's being asked from the private companies or financial entities in this country. So we have institutional control that is very strong, sometimes politically intervened, depending on the government in office. This intermediation or this control can become even more stronger in this manner, more political, if we can say. So we also work, and this is the other mechanism that I wanted to talk about, we carry out permanent meetings with the projects and open meetings where there is a possibility of exchange of information. In our case, we just had a national meeting with close to 50 projects with an open mechanism for them to exchange information in communication spaces that are not very much controlled. And this makes the information between organizations to flow and for them to start building interesting relations between them that are not mediated by the fund and that are powered by us in our activities. I wanted to talk about the last mechanism, which are social control mechanisms that organizations and the civil society have in the countries and that are more developed due to the actions of the organizations. The Emerger Fund has shown actions in the country, and it has an image. We have been working for only 2 years, and funds such as Sandana, Casa of Asol that have been working for more than 15 years to have a strong institutional image. And this is because the social controls are based on facts and not on words, meaning people control us for what we are doing and not for what we are saying. And this, well, the saying in Colombia is that in a small town, there are lots of gossip, you know, everyone knows about everything. All of our actions are public, and all of the information going around makes us have the reputation that we currently have based on our actions, not on our words. Those are the six mechanisms that I believe summarize the question you asked, Cristina. Thank you very much, Juan Camilo, for your answer. Now we have Eduardo. So when I was carrying out the interviews with the funds, the topic that kept coming up regarding challenges was the little local funding access, local philanthropy or at national level. So I would like you to tell us if there are strategies or how do you see this possibility of attracting local philanthropy to support these sort of projects And if actually in Latin America it is realistic to talk about attracting local national philanthropy into these sort of activities. Thank you very much, Cristina. Can you listen to me well? Yes? Yes? Okay, I had some connection problems. Well, I believe Amalia and Juan Camilo have talked about the model. And something important that we see from Bolivia with this movement of social environmental funds is that we are at a moment of international philanthropy where we want to place several resources mainly for climate matters. Even though we talk about international philanthropy a lot, this climate change and loss of forests will be addressed locally. So the greatest challenge from our places where we see that this is happening, that all of this environmental devastation is happening, the idea is for us to see that the resources reach these groups, these communities that live there. How do we attract this? Well, we believe this is something very delicate. In Semilla Social Environmental Fund, we have put together a model based on the approved experiences of Fondo Casa of 17, 18 years, and an experience in which that we believe we share lots of similarities with the other 9 social environmental funds that are part of the Social Environmental Alliance. So first, I believe there is a key word on this, which is legitimacy. The model of social environmental funds showed legitimacy before the groups and communities in the country. They recognize us as part of the same country, and that is where this next step comes in about generating trust. Without legitimacy and trust, it is very difficult to be able to get resources effectively for these groups and communities. So I will, just as an example, as an anecdote, I am in La Paz. I am from Santa Cruz in Bolivia. I actually now I'm visiting some communities on Monday. When we were in a community more than 5,000 meters high, trying to talk with a lady that was shepherding her llamas. She said that she didn't really trust these photographers being there. And it was like, you will take the images and you will sell them. And I was telling this lady, we are Bolivian, I am from Santa Cruz. So we sat down, drank some mate de gota, and we were sharing with this lady all the afternoon. She thought we were foreigners. So there's a lot of lack of trust in the communities, and we are trying to reestablish this trust, this legitimacy and trust models in the social environmental funds. This is something we can offer. And after this, I believe structure systems are important. In this Semilla Social Environmental Fund, we have established a legal structure that is fully recognized in the country. It is not only about philosophy, there is a structure, it is recognized by laws, and this structure allows us to have the capacity of making donations in local currency to these baseline groups. So giving these resources to these guardians of these places is something that can become difficult because many of these groups do not even have a legal structure. They don't know what a bank account is, but they do know very well how, as the lady that was shepherding llamas, she knew that the lagoon was drying out, and she knew that there is another place where her animals could go and eat some grass. So they have this local knowledge. She knows how to solve her own challenges, her problems, and all of the community knows how to do this, and they know how to get organized and so reach in these groups. Being able to provide resources and guaranteeing that this is successful, it's a large challenge. And I believe for philanthropy, the closest we are these environmental, social environmental funds of the territories that we want to act on, there will be a greater warranty of actually being able to keep this territory. So regarding your question, Christina, on local philanthropy, well, this is still small, it's reduced in our Latin American countries. There is a great dependence from the North. This is a reality. There are some lights there. There are some possibilities that are taking place. For example, in Bolivia, there is a new law. Well, not new. It's been in place for more than 5 years. And this is about business, social responsibility. Now businesses are aware that they need to have what this law calls social balances. And there is an interest in seeing how to be able to support them through this social responsibility. However, it is something that is just extraordinary, something that companies don't know how to do. And some of them have actually approached us to be able to know what we are doing, how we are reaching to the groups. But I believe this will take several years to be put together. What has been developed in the North, in the US and Europe has been in place for decades, and in Latin America for local philanthropy to move forward. And Juan Camilo actually shared some experiences in Colombia, and probably later on he can talk about this, where there are some lights of advancements in the sector of the companies, the private sector, that are paying more attention to the existence of our social environmental funds and see how this reaches groups. And as Amalia said, they are invisible for international philanthropy. So I was able to meet this lady shepherding llamas and visiting her community 5,000 meters high. This is for sure not in Google Maps. And these sort of communities are all around our territories, who are those who are protecting these biomas. These are those people. So I believe, Christina, that's how I will like to stop. Thank you. Thank you, Eduardo.
To Amalia again. Amalia, we know that Casa Fund was one of the beneficiaries of the Mackenzie Scott's gifts. So we want to ask how does this helped CASA's operations and impact, and also ask you to have for the next two questions a brief answers to have some time for the questions from the public. Thanks.
Yes, yeah, this is brief. Well, it was. We were hoping, you know, we were very happy. We had no idea who the person was. We were approached by this consulting firm. But there are a few things that called our attention and that we were hoping more funders would embrace. One is they didn't ask us to write a proposal, to write a log frame, to write complex budgets. They just said, can we see what you have and what you've done? So the publications, all our audits over the years, we had all the numbers, we had everything. Now we had examples of proposals, everything was there. All they wanted to know was what we were doing. And then one day they come and say, we're going to give you $5 million and wait for the announcement of the donor. Because that was another thing we were worried about. Who's giving us this money? Because it's not every money we can actually take. This makes it complex for us, including in the local, in the local relationships, because we're not going to take money from mining companies, from gas companies. And so because we have a specific, we're not going to invest even this donation, for example, we had to be very careful. We need to invest because it can't be sitting there. And it's very important for us to generate more. The other ends, but we have to know that we are investing in clean things. And so anyway, so there's a lot of complexity in that, but it was very important, I think, as a statement of competence that we were found by somebody who never, I don't know how she found us, we still don't know. And then they don't even, they said, oh, send us a letter every year, no, just to say what you're doing. And then recently they said, oh, no need to send anything. So I think that what it translates into is the trust that we don't have internally. It's a trust in the systems, in what we, it's not a blind trust. We have everything to show for our transparency, competence. Now we are impeccable with our money. We are very efficient. CASA is making more than 500 grants a year. In the last 18 years, we've made more than 3,000 grants. This is what we're talking about. No, it's about the outscaling, but for that we need to scale up the funding that we get. And we have to go ask for international organizations because that's the money that's available. All of us, we have many local funds, social justice funds in Brazil. Some of them are here, actually, I've noticed. And 99%, or in our case right now, 100% of all our funding, which is not small, comes from outside the country. And this should be shameful. But we've been using, you know, these arguments. I don't know what it is. Now, we've had these conversations here many times. So it was important to as a statement, mostly for locals. We didn't have the impact that we thought it was going to, but also it didn't make anybody run away. Like, oh, you have a lot of money, so you don't need ours. It actually gave bigger funders the trust to actually, believe that we are capable of managing. So that I believe that in a way, the funding that now we got from the Forest Peoples and Climate Initiative that CLUA is managing. CLUA has been our partner for a long time and Samdana's partner, and now already funding Emerger, Peru and Brazil to work cross-border in the Amazon. So we were able to bring $8 million for the Alliance to be able to fly, which is, you know, we had the idea and we were going to struggle, and now we actually can breathe a little bit and go faster, because you could see, no, Emerger is working for 2 years and they've funded, I don't know, more than 100 projects. It's very fast when you have the mechanism. So that's mostly what this did for us. It's actually bringing more trust. But the last thing I was going to say is we don't have enough money for the demand that we get. We are going to bring some numbers, but we just recently, CASA makes many calls for proposals. We spread across our networks. We are very connected to people working on all kinds and aspects of sustainability, from urban to coastal to forest to rivers. And we create calls. The money comes in, we create calls and we inform the communities. And we had money for 20 projects and we got 250. That's what's happening. We have way too much demand from very important and very worthy groups, and we can't meet their needs because we don't have enough money. So it is about, you know, the world understand. There's a lot of money. There is a lot of money out there. We hear, you know, the billions that are now being put together for climate, but where is it going that it's not arriving? So anyway, that's it.
Thanks, Anali. So for now, the last question of this round, and then we will open the floor if you have any question for our speakers. So Eduardo, más allá del financiamiento que reciben de
beyond financing, getting from donors, what other sort of support do you believe will be needed from donors for funds and for these projects? Thank you very much, Cristina. I will talk from my country's perspective. It is important for people to acknowledge that Bolivia exists for many donors, Bolivia is not seen as a part of these great biomes in Latin America. 46% of our territory is Amazonian, and it's shared with 8 additional countries. We're part of the American Chaco that is actually shared with Argentina, Brazil, and Paraguay, and the Andean Cordillera. But here we're also part of a larger problem in Bolivia, which is the loss of tropical forests. This is not only Bolivia's problem, but it is a problem that we share with our neighbors. In this map that you can see here, Cristina, this is a map from Global Forest Watch. In the upcoming days, we will have the updated 2022 version, and this is 2021. And here you can see we're third after Brazil and the Congo Democratic Republic regarding deforestation in the world. Then we have Indonesia, Peru, Colombia, Cameroon, Laos, Malaysia, and so on. What's interesting about this chart is that we have 5 social environmental funds that have been created and that are working in this country trying to fight this large problem of deforestation. We have Brazil with CASA, in Bolivia, Semilla, in Peru, the Peru Social Environmental Fund, Colombia, Emerger, and Sandana, which is part of the Alliance Indonesia. So we are also a part of what we try for it to be a solution. And I believe what's important here is that we need for people to acknowledge, to understand that social environmental funds have the internal capacity of managing these resources. This allows us to do so, and we are able to work on that. We are within the countries. We can reach the local communities. We have been doing that. And just because we are a part of these movements, because we came from those movements, so we know the paths that we need to take to get the people who do not have the capacity of reaching philanthropy, or if it's difficult for philanthropy to reach them. So I believe what I would say is for people to acknowledge this existence, and there will be a revalue in this on how to reach these communities in the South. That's it, Cristina. Thank you very much. Thank you, Eduardo, Maria Amalia, and Juan Camilo for your answers. Now, I will open up for questions. So if you have any questions, you can raise your hand and ask questions in Spanish or English. Or if you want, you can write in the chat as well.
The floor is open. Marina.
Hola, mucho gusto.
Marina, please, yes.
Un fondo de mujeres en México que se llama Fondo.
I'm in a women funds in Mexico called Semillas Fund. My question is for Juan because he talked about this, but if anyone else wants to talk about this, that's fine. You talked about showing effectiveness, and also Maria Amalia talked about this, but I don't know if you can talk about how you do this. Marina, the question is about efficacy indicators, not necessarily indicators, but in general, how you do to show this effectiveness. Maria Amalia, would you like to go first? Well, Spanish, English, I don't really know. Well, I'll go in Spanish. Well, finding out and also adding the understanding of the groups about the fact that we need information. We are like the self-funding or branch. So to get resources for them, they need to give us the information. So whenever we ask them to give us data, that is like, what for? And it's for this, and they understand this. So they give us the data. And that way we are able to put together an important amount of readings that we are carrying out for producing this. So actually, to be true, it's how there is a relation with them and for them to actually see us as a part of the movement, seeing that we are there working for them. This is hard work as well, convincing such a consolidated feel that there are other ways of doing things. So I don't know if this is of help. I would like to talk about something here, and it is that there are large difficulties of literacy in rural populations because there is little education or a very low level of education. So there are lots of difficulties to put in reading, even though we know that this effort needs to be made regarding writing and trying to write in, because paper has the power of staying there, because what's in reading will remain. But we're finding different mechanisms. I wanted to tell you a story to tell you, because we need to find different mechanisms. In the meeting we had in mid-April with the funded project supported by the Emaher Fund, there was lots of space. Actually, there was a coincidence, and it is that some of the collaborators supporting us with the projects were at the meeting. Almost most of them were there and most of the time, and they were able to hear the organizations talk about the impacts of the project and what was happening with the organizations and the dimension of what could have been evidence in written in the reports and the narrative of these people at this meeting. In my whole life, and I have many years of experience, never in my life have I had and gone out of a meeting with so many people holding me and actually with tears in my eyes, because there were solutions to the problems that I hadn't been able to find before. So this makes you know, get in a position that is very interesting but very difficult about at the same time on the responsibility of these processes, because you need to find more resources, because the resources there are not enough, there are scarce. But the transformation that these few resources reach in the community have are fundamental. Unfortunately, there is this limitation of literacy that doesn't allow for written documents to talk about these experiences. So there are different mechanisms. But in this anecdote that I am narrating, there is a learning that there is an important impact in the life of these people and these organizations through these small fundings. Thank you very much. Thank you, Juan Camila and Maria Amalia. Now, talking also about what Juan Camilo said, Maria Amalia, if you want to take the floor, that's fine as well. But the question is, what channels are there to reach these international funding funds? And if there is a way of them changing the rules a little bit of decreasing the administrative load, et cetera. I don't know, Maria Amalia, if you want to say something as you were asking in the chat.
Well, let's we'll keep the English that I started with. Yes, well, that's one of the reasons that we got more intimately involved with international funders for the last few years, dedicated to spaces, you know, to be there, to share, to change the narrative that they had from us. You know, the thing with intermediaries is not that it hasn't been bad in the past, because there were two fields, right? The private and the intermediaries, those who raise money to fund their causes. The thing is that this terminology and the concept here is very bad. And because we actually truly are a third category, we can't fit in the old known categories, because we are based in our countries. We come from our own movements. We mobilize resources to get to a public that nobody else can do. It's not that they if they tried, they could. It's not possible, because it's
because you need to belong to these systems. You need to have dedicated many people's lives. Now, we are composed by longstanding activists who have been dreaming of a way to figure out how to change the status quo of the excluded, and, you know, and trying to do it for them, which is valid too. Large NGOs here have been trying to do the work because they were not a fund and they didn't decide to create a fund. When we figured the gaps, we decided, okay, we have to do it. I mean, there's no way that we can excuse ourselves from the responsibility if we can see that there is a path. And that's the reason when CASA called the other South American activists we had been working with, that they all said yes, and that they set it up so fast, and that funding came so fast. Esther was one of the first, when she was in Open Society, to say, wow, no, I'm going to fund some of those new funds. And that's what it takes. But it brings the reputation of older funds, because we are there with them, backing them up, making sure that if there's a problem, we're going to work this out together. So this transcends, you know, just what Juan Camilo said. It's not just about talking, it's about demonstrating. And we have been able to do that. So it's not easy. And I mentioned in the answer there that conservation funders are harder. That's the reason we have been members of HRFN for so long, because we realize that they can understand us better, because we are human rights funders funding ways to protect life on Earth. It's the combination that makes this so powerful. And they could understand it faster than the conservation funders ever could. It took them a very long time to come to us. And it took the pandemic, and it took changing the government. December 2018 in Brazil was like, wow, what's going to happen with Brazil now? Let's figure this out. And the money came back, because it had gone away. It had been pulled out. So there's a lot of conversations we could and should have with philanthropy. And we keep hoping that that foundations see us as partners, as their grant-making structures, and not as another grantee, because we aren't another grantee. We don't execute that money. We actually donate. We help them to get to a level with their resources that they can't not do. And nobody else can do it either. So it is a big, big conversation, but that's one of the things we keep trying to bring to the field.
Excellent. Thanks, Amalia. And I changed to Spanish. gracias a todos por estar aquí.
Thank you all very much for being here. We are some minutes over time, but this has been a very interesting conversation. So I would like to thank Maria Amalia, Eduardo, and Juan for the presence here and for your time. After this conversation, we're going to share with you some notes on the meeting, the recording, and also the study. If you would like to go over some more information regarding the status of funds. Claire, thank you very much for your presence here. And if you have any questions, or if you want a contact to continue having conversations, just text us and we will be glad to share this with you. Thank you very much. Goodbye.